always seems to get involved, doesn't he?
I'm telling you, too many coconuts have hit him right on top of the skull.
Well, I think Anthony will be a great acquisition. He can do it all.
Avery, whose show is this?
All right, let's go ahead and dive on into some of your guys' questions and comments and all of that good stuff. We did get a few supers, which means I get to play the most important sound on the show. Fuck Washington! All right, I'm going to scroll up to the top where, let's see. Wow, we had a lot of super comments. So I'm going to be here a little while. Get comfortable. Let's run. UNLV writes, can you still, I'm guessing this is supposed to say, can you still make the case for sending LeBron to the Cavs for Jared Allen, sending a first to Cleveland as well? How else are you getting a good center? I wouldn't send a first. Like you're sending them LeBron James. And I think that, you know, this like Cleveland thing is I think kind of run its course with that core. LeBron at the very least, you know, offers that really good story and maybe makes them a better playoff team than Jared Allen does. It does impact their size, so maybe you send, in a separate deal, maybe you send like DeAndre Ayton over there for like Max Strus or something, and then in that case, maybe you send some draft capital there. But I still wouldn't send a first rounder and LeBron James for Jared Allen. Now, if they're cool with like a straight up one for one. Perfectly fine with that. I think that makes a whole lot of sense for both teams. Makes sense for LeBron if he wants to continue making upwards of $20+ million a year, and if he wants to go home and all of that stuff, then you get, you know, kind of an appealing outcome for both sides there. Outside of that, like and by the way, I think if I'm the Lakers, I only do this if LeBron comes to me and says, I'm leaving, right? I still think the surest pathway to filling out the best roster that you could fill out this summer still involves LeBron James, especially LeBron James on a discount, which it seems he is almost certainly going to be compared to the caliber of basketball that he is still going to play next year. And the caliber of basketball that he played as recently as last season. So, or even this postseason. So I have been very consistent on this. I know that there's a whole bunch of noise about LeBron might do this, LeBron might do that. I saw that report that Shum said that the two sides haven't even spoken to each other and that the Lakers haven't even made him an offer. I think there's an explanation for that that I guess I can get into it. If you guys listen to the Hoop Collective, Brian Windhorst and those guys recently talked about how the term offer is like sacrosanct in the NBA, in that like they are very specific about the situations where they're comfortable, teams are comfortable using the verbiage offer, using the term offer. And so, you know, whenever those guys talk about, you know, the types of deals that teams are discussing, they'll oftentimes talk about them using the term concept of a trade or other similar terms to concept, but they will be very sure to not talk about offers that teams have made in trades. And I am of the belief that teams feel the same way about offers with contracts, right? Especially during this window where the Lakers have exclusive negotiating power with LeBron. If the Lakers make an offer to LeBron and he accepts that offer at a time where the Lakers are still milling over their options, whether they want to operate as a cap space team or if they want to operate above the cap, they can't make an offer to LeBron James. So I think this is a ploy from Clutch to like remind the Lakers, hey guys, still sitting over here, which I think is kind of telling of the situation. But I have been very consistent on this, and I continue to you know, bang this drum. I think LeBron is going to be back with the Lakers on a 2-year, 50-ish million dollar deal, million-dollar deal total, not per year. And the Lakers will operate above the cap and look to, you know, trade, you know, those guys I talked about, Ayton, Vando, Connect, and first round capital to add another rotation player to their roster while using their full mid-level exception on, say, you know, a center or somebody like that. And then also use whatever room they have under the first apron that they would be hard capped at to bring back Marcus Smart, on a deal, you know, around $7 or $8 million or so, hopefully. And that would be kind of the roster that they go into next season with. It's not the most inspiring offseason that the Lakers could possibly have. It is the most risk-averse offseason that the Lakers could possibly have. But I think, you know, given how things have played out with the center market elsewhere, where I don't think Kessler is going anywhere, I don't think Duren is going anywhere, I just think that this is probably the path that the Lakers wind up taking, and that involves LeBron being back. But if he does go to the Lakers and say, guys, we had our fun, I want to go finish out my career in Cleveland, I think it would be a cool story. I think he would move further away from a championship. But, you know, I think in that world, both sides get something out of the equation, and they get to part amicably, and LeBron rides into that, you know, greater Ohio or the greater Cleveland, Akron, Ohio sunset. Which, do they even, you wouldn't ride into the sunset if you're riding north or northeast. So I don't even know what you would be riding into there. Like, maybe if you leave early enough, you could ride into like the sunrise, maybe. Let's see. The next question here that we have, the next super comment that we have here, comes from Let's Run UNLV. Turner was way worse than Ayton was last year, by the way. Look, did you guys read some of the details that were about like Giannis's last season there in Milwaukee and how just terrible a situation that appeared to be? One of the details that came out of it, and I know that I can't quite judge because literally on the other side of this wall sits a golf simulator. So like, I can't fully judge Doc too much here, but apparently Doc Rivers made the Milwaukee Bucks install a $90,000 golf sim for himself. This, by the way, it comes on the heels of some of the stuff that you heard while he was coaching and running the Clippers, that essentially he was like golfing like 4 days a week while he was not coaching enough and definitely not paying close enough attention as their lead basketball decision maker. So that's why that went, you know, horrifically. But yeah, like, look, if you want to try to argue that Turner has slipped athletically enough to where he can't be the rim protector that he used to be, and he can't move his feet well enough on the perimeter, and that puts into question or calls into question his ability as a defender, honestly, fair. I'm not. I don't even fully disagree. I think that's a legitimate concern. But if the price is Ayton and Vando, whose contract you're trying to get rid of anyway, and Dalton Connect, who you know isn't going anywhere, might not even be in the league in a couple of years, or even in a year, you know, and maybe like a first-round pick, you know, and maybe you might have to take Kyle Kuzma's contract in that scenario. Like, I don't know. The price is so low that I would consider myself interested. And again, if it pans out, if Turner isn't washed and it turns out that that situation was just so bad that, you know, everybody got touched by the stink, then, you know, it's just, it, you know, I think that's, that happens all the time where a good player goes to a situation that is so bad and so just toxic that they finally get away from that situation and everybody remembers, oh yeah, that's right. That player was actually good at basketball at one point. You know, that happens all the time in the NBA, all the time in professional sports. I would also add, by the way, I would also add that he, Turner is like the guy who went on the record on a podcast to say that Giannis's unprofessionalism was something that, you know, made him kind of look around and be like, oh, so we don't have to take this seriously then. Oh, okay. And while that isn't a very appealing aspect of somebody's character, like you don't want to put that stuff on the record. I do like that he was aware enough of what a good situation looks like to be able to be like, ooh, this isn't a good situation. So I believe that Turner would turn things around a little bit. I think it would be a worthy gamble there, especially at the current price. And it also allows you to partially check that box while maintaining your flexibility across the rest of your roster. You turn, you know, money that was probably going to be useless next year in Jared Vanderbilt and Dalton Kincaid into useful money. And it's like, you know, DeAndre Ayton isn't a part of your big plans either. So I think it's fine. And maybe you take on Kyle Kuzma's expiring contract, which is also perfectly fine to me. Let's see. The next question here goes or comes from Matthew the Sicilian, who writes, it's wild to me that Stan goes out all out to win with the Rams, but penny pinches with Denver. It's markets. You know, in LA, it's a lot easier to make a buck with your sports team than it is with in Denver. So I think that's part of it. But there aren't luxury taxes, I don't think, in the NFL. There's a hard cap that, you know, every team has to operate under. So I think that's part of it. I don't know. It's a great question. I'll have to ask maybe some of my friends who cover the Nuggets about Stan Kroenke, the owner there, and how he treats that situation versus with the Rams. But by the way, this is not unique, actually, where you'll actually see this sometimes with sports owners. Actually, you see this with Mark Walter, where the Dodgers are very clearly the thing that matters the most to him. And he also owns the LA Sparks and has come under criticism several times for how he runs things there with the Sparks. So, you know, you have different priorities. Somebody has to come first in this case. And some owners, you know, like we see this with the Saints, right? Their ownership group, where the Saints are clearly their top priority and the New Orleans Pelicans are also there. And it just makes things really complicated for the team, you know, that is not the favorite. Right. And, you know, I would kind of compare it to, Birds of Prey, right. Where, you know, I don't know if you guys have ever watched some of those documentaries, but sometimes those Eagles and Hawks and Falcons or whatever will only feed the stronger of the two offspring that they are trying to raise. And eventually one of those offspring dies. And there's one documentary that I watch fairly frequently where the one bald eagle, you know, chick eats the other one after it dies to get some of the you know, critical nutrients and hydration that comes from its sibling. And that's how it sometimes plays out with some of these pro teams where the owner cares about one, uses all of the resources on the one, and the other one just kind of exists. And I wouldn't say, you know, gets cannibalized, but, you know, certainly it's pretty rare that an owner is just outright successful sustainably, across all of the teams that, that owner owns. Oop, sorry, wrong button. Let's see. The next one here comes from BT Kingsley 5225. Need John Collins, small ball five, can rebound, and I'm going to say good athlete there because I don't think you guys want me using the word. I don't want that clipped. But no, I think Collins is an interesting guy. He was somebody who the Lakers kicked the tires on last year with a Rui for and like a pick for Collins swap. I do like that he's a you know, lob threat as well as a floor spacer offensively. He's not very good defensively, but for the right number, like I think he would be interesting. I think the Lakers are going to have to be able to play five out next year, and he would allow them to, you know, to play five out. So I would say that, you know, he's a he's an interesting guy. I think he's probably pretty far down my priority list personally because he is not a rim protector at all. And, you know, the Lakers are going to need a, you know, anchor big defense, a defensive anchor type big to make up for Luka and Austin on the perimeter. And he wouldn't really help you with that. But if he is, you know, somebody that you sign, you know, later in the offseason after a lot of guys are gone, I'm fine with it. And then certainly like next season after he has already been signed. And in December, when he becomes available, if, you know, he's still pretty good and he's on a reasonable contract, maybe you turn like Dalton's contract into John Collins, potentially, depending on what kind of team he goes for or goes to. I like the idea. I like John Collins quite a bit. I've always thought he's one of the more underrated players in the NBA. But And as such, I would be perfectly fine if the Lakers circled his name to kind of come back to later in the offseason after they've taken care of all the things that they desperately need to take care of. AJ Hodge writes, at what trade can we make? Ayton and others for Ware and Turner with picks? Thoughts on Watson? I look, if you're getting both Turner and Ware, you're giving away all of your, you know, every first rounder that you could possibly give up, and maybe even a swap or two. He is Ware is somebody who the Bucks like a lot as a prospect that they can develop. He is cost controlled and very cheap, which is something that really matters to them, as they know they aren't going to be very good. So you don't, and if you're not going to be very good, then you want to be cheap, and he helps you do that. I don't think Ware is going anywhere. Remember, I reported before the Giannis trade went down that the Lakers were trying to get involved there to see if they could land Ware as part of the deal, if they helped facilitated the deal elsewhere. And they were told like, no, we're probably going to keep this guy. And, so that's how that played out. But those conversations have already happened. They're probably going to continue to happen. I just don't see Milwaukee letting him go when he's probably the part of that trade that they consider most valuable, given his raw talent, the position he plays, his contract, all of that stuff. He's probably the part, like the centerpiece of that trade coming back from Miami for the best player that Milwaukee has ever had or had since Kareem. So yeah, I don't think Ware is going anywhere. But as far as like what other trades, you know, I like Cam Johnson as a possibility. I've talked about Miles Turner. Basically, you know, what I've been doing is I'll go out there and I'll find a player on like a contract in the low 20s that has maybe a couple of years left on that contract that, you know, that team would be looking to move. And that's the type of player that I'm sending Dalton, Vando, and Ayton out for. And depending on the caliber of that player and the situation that the team that I'm negotiating with, that kind of dictates how much draft capital I have to use on top of the salaries that are going out. Is that it? Nope, we got another one here. Let's Run UNLV writes, the best free agents were already Lakers. We only have two picks and we don't have good salaries. Running it back is probably the best roster we can build. That's kind of the, he's offsides. That's kind of the realization I am coming to. And if that is indeed how this summer plays out, you guys are not going to want to miss this here podcast because I am probably going to light the entire Lakers organization on fire, pour some gasoline on that fire, and then pee a little bit on the ashes that are left behind because it's not just that you had a disappointing offseason at a time when you promised a lot to Luka Doncic, but to get here, like this is the part of this conversation that I don't think can be exaggerated enough. To get here with even the marginal flexibility that the Lakers have right now, that required punting multiple seasons when you had LeBron James and Anthony Davis. And by punting, I'm not saying that they outright tanked while they had those guys, but they also didn't compete for championships in terms of the caliber of rosters that they forced those guys to try to carry. And it was years of that before Luka shows up. And then it was three transaction cycles later, and they're still saying, just wait, just wait, just wait. Summer of 26, baby. Just you wait. And so if this offseason isn't spectacular, isn't incredible, if the Lakers don't go into next year as a bona fide title contender, and I know that that's a very high bar, but if they don't reach that bar, you guys can go ahead and write in ink. Just go ahead, like grab a big pack of popcorn. Pour yourself a nice tall glass of whatever adult beverage you prefer. Light up whatever, you know, is legal in your state. Just know that it is going to be a very entertaining episode that day. All right. Let's go another one. Let's Run UNLV writes, I mean, is Rob even going to trade both picks? It depends on the return, obviously. I am skeptical of it because he has never done that before. He likes to go into any given year with at least a first rounder in his back pocket to be able to use at the deadline. Just in case prices get lower as you get closer to the deadline, then they currently sit right now. I would anticipate actually that he probably does exactly that unless, you know, some crazy situation arises and it takes like both picks to get like Kessler or both picks to get Durin. The nice thing there is that like with Durin and with Kessler, Ayton is like the Kirkland brand version of those players where He's an okay defensive anchor. He's an okay finisher. He's an okay offensive center, all of those things. Okay. Like, he's a good rebounder. He would be the kind of player who, you know, could play next to Lauri Markkanen, could play next to Jaren Jackson Jr., could play, you know, in some spots that, you know, could benefit and maybe even help Cade Cunningham a little bit. Like, he's like a stand-in, right? So if negotiations completely fall apart with Jalen Duren and he says, screw you guys, I'm getting ready to sign my qualifying offer unless you send me, you know, or unless you trade me, right? And Denver or Detroit wants to avoid that situation, then I could see Rob putting both picks, you know, into the middle of the table to get one of those two guys. Outside of that, just, you know, with the amount of information in front of me, I don't really see him using both picks. I would probably see him. And if he does use both picks, I think he would probably be looking to get like second round draft capital back so that he can do something at the deadline using draft capital. So that's probably how I would see that plan out. Let's see. Is that all of it? Yeah. Nope. One, we got another one. BT Kingsley writes, LD, Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, Peyton Watson, John Collins, Robert Williams with Jackson, Keon Smart, Ayton, JL, Carr, I guess. Or JL, who's JL? Oh, Jake LaRavia. You didn't mention Thero in that group also. Look, I mean, if the Lakers really want to get out there and completely revitalize the roster, this is kind of like one of the better case scenarios here. You know, it would, I could see it maybe working, but it would be, I would be very nervous about just letting LeBron James and letting Rui Hachimura walk. Like, is that team better? I don't know. I'm curious. I want to know what you guys think. Is that team better than running it back and adding a center? I don't think it is. It's close. And it certainly isn't, all right, bring on OKC caliber, you know? So it's like it's an interesting version of the offseason. A lot of moving parts. A lot would have to go right there for the Lakers. But I do think longer term, that's a better roster than like the one, than like how this roster would age if you just ran it back. So you have that going for you. I said I was going to be on here shortly, and I'm an hour in. You guys. Let's see. I was shorthanding blocks. Oh, okay. I was like, I was like, I don't know if you want me to say, I don't know if you want me to use that kind of language talking about an athlete. Okay. Whew, that was funny. That was really good, Kingsley. That's going to be something I repeat to, the people who are coming over for the World Cup games tonight. No, I'm like, yeah, he's a better athlete than Rui vertically. So he can, you know, he can get up there to the rim and contest up there. The problem with guys like, you know, guys like this kind of rim protector is it takes so much effort for them to get as high as they need to, that it kind of hurts their second bounce. So if you really contest hard at the rim when somebody's driving there, it oftentimes takes them out of position for a rebound, right? We actually used to see this. A tall version of this is actually like JaVale McGee, where every single time he jumped to contest, Jackson does this too. Every single time they would jump to contest, they would jump as high as they possibly could. And I would always watch JaVale and I'd be like, just jump like half as high. You're tall. You have long arms. You're already really athletic. If you just jump like normal and then land in a, you know, still active position, you could then go get the rebound, defend another shot or something like that. Whereas like with Jason Collins, that's not an option. In order to get as high as he needs to get to contest those shots, he needs to elevate as high as he possibly can. And he winds up being in the air so long and he winds up landing out of position that, like, you know, it actually puts some strain on your backline defense. So he's a better athlete, but I don't think like I would consider his athleticism in addition for them defensively. That's never been what he's particularly good at. That's so funny. It's like, I don't see. All right. I think I'm going to jump out of here. No, I'm not. We have more super comments. Let's see. Brady, I'm looking through here because Brady left just a super comment. So thank you very much, Brady. The next comment I see from you is, I'm about out of hope for the summer. Look, we got a week or so before we start talking like that. Like, things can go in the Lakers' favor to an extent that we can walk away from this and be like, maybe it wasn't the summer that we wanted it to be. Maybe it was like, you know, like in order for all of the waiting and all of the kicking the can and the promises that they made to Luka, in order for that to be worth it, you need like a 9 out of 10 type of summer. And if they have like an 8, 8.5 type of summer, it's not like devastating and it's not great. I would probably still light them on fire, but like we wouldn't go into the season thinking hope is lost, right? Now, if they have like a 7 or anything worse than a 7, then yeah, I would say fire everybody, full reset, get, you know, Mark Walter, go out and hire the people that you want to hire. And actually build out the organization that we think that the Lakers, or that we know that the Lakers have to be. That's where I would say, So you, Brady also, you know, reiterated it there. I would just say that, like, I get it. Waiting is difficult, especially waiting at a time where like viable or foreseeable, options seem to be coming off of the board, right? We just had Isaiah Hartenstein, you know, extended the other night, right? Or last night, whatever it was, which took another option off of the board. It's just, I get it. I understand why people are running out of hope, and I understand why people are running out of patience. I myself feel that way very often too. But it's just one of those things where it's like, what's our alternative to just seeing how this plays out, you know? Let's just see how this plays out and, you know, deal with the fallout from all of, you know, a potentially disappointing off season or the kind of off season that leaves us hopeless, in that event. It just kind of is what it is. I light them on fire. We apply, like, you know, people hopefully boo when they see Rob Pelinka, and, you know, in, the hallways there at the Staples Center, whatever, or in Vegas or whenever he is shown, just to make ownership fully understand the extent to which you know, people were frustrated with the front office, and you kind of go from there, and you hope that they hear the message, they hope that they heed the message, and we move forward. I hopped on here thinking I was going to be here for a half hour, and I have now been here for twice that amount of time. So I'm going to hop out of here. I have to, you know, put the finishing touches on the tri-tip that I'm serving to my company tonight. That is, yeah. Have a, let's see. So it's Saturday. I'm going to be back here tomorrow with a mailbag episode or maybe more rumors to react to as well. So if you guys have any questions, leave them in the form of a 5-star review on iTunes, and I'll get to as many of those as I possibly can. Please hit that like button. Please hit that subscribe button. Turn on notifications, all that good stuff. And until tomorrow, have a great rest of your day. Make somebody else's. I'll talk to you then.